1350 KMAN.
And welcome into In Focus here, News Radio KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples, Dave Lewis on the other side, producing things here for us on KMAN. And it is the fourth Friday of the month, I guess. Is that right? Are we the fourth Friday? Anyway, Raleigh County Police Department featured every last Friday of the month here with us on In Focus. We have Captain Josh Kyle joining us in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Glad to have you in, and I know it's a busy time of year for you. As budget talks continue here, we've been talking a little bit about it here the last couple Raleigh County Law Board meetings. As far as the preparation goes here, where are you currently at?
Okay, the place where we're currently at is we've had a special Law Board meeting. We presented as command staff our initial proposal to the Law Board, and then there was a follow-up meeting, a regular Law Board session. And we offered some adjustments to our initial proposal, and we're, as far as we know, we're looking at our next meeting being May the 20th with possible some additions, not additions, but some revisions at that point. And then we have to have our final budget published in June, and the final budget must be authorized by July 1st.
Now, initially, when it first came out, I think it was a 3.8% increase that was being requested in the budget. That's been revised a little bit.
Yeah, so we were asked about COLA a lot. In the initial presentation, you know, this is my first time going through this, and really as a command staff, it's our first time going through all this. And so in our presentation, we broke it down into elements, and each commander that was proposing an addition to the budget gave up and talked about that. And I talked about the COLA, and we had used the CPI Midwest over the last several years, and I just simply presented that. And with our last meeting in front of the Law Board, we got in some more depth. I learned a little bit more about the CPI Midwest, how it works, how the federal government calculates those numbers, and why we derive our reference to COLA in those numbers themselves. And so we presented some of that information, but the request that came down to us was, okay, this is your initial proposal, and as is normal, where can you shave some money off of that? So the methodology that we use to say, okay, we're looking at a 1.9% COLA based on the CPI Midwest annual average. What if you went down to a 1.3%? We're not saying we'd go down to a 1.3%, but what if you did? How much money would there be? And it's about $93,000, which was a really interesting number, because what it does is it challenges us to bring our proposal down while at the same time trying to maintain the integrity of all those different proposals that we had. There were six of them that the command staff brought, and there was a seventh that we had after just talking with the Law Board. And that $93,000 presented a very interesting challenge. We worked on that, and we were able to present to the Law Board a revised proposal, dropping it down $93,000, and yet maintaining the integrity of these different options.
Now, the COLA, that stands for cost of living adjustment here. Why is it important to keep it at 1.9% in your mind?
I think Brian Johnson, the president of FOP, does an amazing job of explaining that every year. If you do not have a COLA and you do not keep up with, well, obviously, what is the cost of living index? It is an index that tells you this is how much it costs to live in this area. It's saying that the cost of, they look at specific items, consumables like food and other items, and they're saying this is how much more it costs to live in this community. And there's a couple of reasons why that's important. First off, if you don't have appropriate COLAs over time, essentially what you're doing is you're bringing the pay down, because it's costing more and more to live in a community, but yet the pay isn't keeping up with that pace. And the end result is you have employees that are then, for lack of a better phrase, tempted to move elsewhere. And do you really want, first off, officers that police a community that don't live in that community? There's quite a bit of thought that it's always better to have your personnel that are policing a community are actually part of that community. It's the whole idea that the police are the community and the community are the police. And having adequate COLAs help do that. The other reason for it is you just become less competitive. It's a very competitive job market right now. And if you find out that an agency just doesn't pay as well, the benefits aren't as good, why would you go with that organization? You're more likely to be tempted elsewhere or encouraged to go elsewhere that do have consistent COLAs and do have strong benefits.
overall, how would you say RCPD compares to others in the state as far as pay?
It's been quite some time since we've had a salary survey done, but I'd say we're, as of right now, we're pretty competitive. We've essentially, what we've done with the budget over the last several years, just to be frank, is we've done everything we can to maintain the COLAs and made sacrifices elsewhere on the budget because of that belief that it's very important to maintain a personnel that live in the community. And so that's caused some shortages elsewhere, but it's the sacrifices that we made to in order to maintain these COLAs. And I know it's something that can be somewhat controversial, especially if you are talking to people that have had some COLAs cut over the last several years. But it goes back to quality of service. What kind of personnel do you want? Do you want the best that you can just get, or do you want the best available on the market?
All right. Yeah, we're speaking with Captain Josh Kyle here, Riley County Police Department. You know, you mentioned the cuts here, the $93,000 that you presented the last meeting, and a lot of that carves from overtime funds here, which I know is kind of a big necessity here for the department.
Yeah, overtime is really tricky, but I like talking about it because it's a good area to discuss the challenges that we deal with budgetarily. So overtime is one of those accounts where you in part say we can't control certain things. We don't control how many natural disasters occur in a given year. We don't control how many major cases, particularly homicide-level cases, occur in the community within a given year. And those things cause overtime. If we're going to do an adequate job responding to them and investigating them, it's going to result in overtime. But there are other areas that we do control. We control how we structure the organization and how often that results in overtime. We also control how often we authorize overtime and what we authorize it for. And so it provides a really good challenge. It's a very volatile account, but it is something that we can exercise some control over. And so I wanted to place ourselves in a position where could we properly fund this account? It's been underfunded for the last several years. And what we'd like to do is place ourselves in a position where the account is properly funded. In 2018, we had $118,000 that we were over in that account. And the reason why that's so important is because if we are able to properly fund the account, we can then hold ourselves accountable to staying within that budget. It's very difficult if you have an account that you know is underfunded, that you know you're going to go over, to hold yourself accountable, because essentially what you have to do is create an imaginary number. We have to say, well, we know there's not enough money in that account, but let's pretend as if there were, and let's hold ourselves to that number. Whereas conversely, if we have a properly funded account, then we can say, this is how much money we have, and we're not going to go over that amount, so let's stay within that budget. If it turns out there are a lot of external factors that cause us to go over, we'll approach the law board, explain why we're over, and then ask to use or access unused personnel funds in order to continue moving forward. We're fortunately, we've never been in a position where we've ever said, hey, we're completely out of funds as an agency, but we have had several accounts that have gone over, and overtime is one of those. And it provides us with a really good area to see if we can increase the amount that's in that fund at a reasonable level and then hold ourselves accountable.
Now, I know there's been some adjustments made to maybe mitigate overtime a little bit here, maybe the way the shifts are designed here on a daily basis.
Yeah, so the patrol division in the last couple of years has gone to what's called squad-based scheduling. We were on a shift-based system, and the shifts had different hours that they worked. So if you worked the night shift, you worked a 10-hour shift, but if you worked days in the swing shift, you worked an 8-hour shift. And what we looked at was the possibility of having squads come in. So what a squad is, a squad has a sergeant and a corporal assigned to it, and then a group of officers. And what you can do when you assign personnel to squads is they can come out on the street at different times of the day. So instead of having one large shift of people that come to work at, say, 3 o'clock and work till 11 o'clock, you can have different squads. You can break them down into squads and have them come in at different times depending on when you're busy. So as things pick up as far as activity, you have a number of squads that are on the street at the same time. What it also allows you to do is you can assign one squad as primary call takers and report takers while another squad's going out and doing proactive activity. That's really important because the squad that is going out and doing proactivity is really following the best that we know about law enforcement, and that is the police are really effective when they're focused and proactive. And so many times those squads that are not busy taking calls and reports or assigned to that task are able then to go out and do those things that we know lead to prevention of crime. Well, it also turns out that organizing ourselves according to squads has had an impact on overtime. We believe that it's dropped overtime quite a bit because if you think about it, you've got multiple squads that are out on the street at any given time. You can find that squad that's about to get off shift and stop assigning them calls and reports and assign it to the squad that just came on a few hours ago. That has the effect of lowering the overtime that you experience on a given day.
All right, very good. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about this here with Captain Josh Kyle, RCPD. You're listening to In Focus on News Radio KMAN.